President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard, and also the funniest sports podcast. Let me start it out. It's the realest, blackest, and funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the south, going down. Audio Shop Talk brought to you right in your ear hole by yours truly, Joseph Ward, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com, where the realest podcasters go down, pinky rain shining in your face, pinky rain shining in your face. Hold up. Hey, man, we coming off a hot note. We had our first live podcast this past weekend, and it was a success. We had a room full of people, a house full of people. Everybody brought their A-game. All the performance was live. Shout out to Ms. Dice. Shout out to Mike Jack Music. Shout out to Enigma September. Shout out to Adrian Bate, a.k.a. TT Talks, for hosting our podcast. Y'all make sure y'all check out the TT Talks podcast. Just Google TT Talks. Get you everything you need. Shout out to Shelby Davis. Shout out to Queen Candace for the Shelby's World podcast. Shout out to Patrick for his Lessons from the Screen podcast. Shout out to Enigma September for his Enigma Self-Hour podcast. Shout out to my dog, Ian, DJing on the ones and twos, doing this thing, holding it down. Shout out to myself for bringing the pain during my segment as well. You got to shout yourself out, too. You got to shout yourself out. The whole squad, everybody was in attendance. Shout out to you. Shout out to Shakara for helping us with our behind-the-scenes things. Everybody, it was a success. So we already have photos floating around, some photos floating around on social media. So go to Freedom Train Network on Instagram, at Freedom Train Network, Facebook, Freedom Train Network. I think that's all the places right now, but go check it out. I'm telling you, we're gonna have video audio coming soon from it, but it went down this weekend. It was just, I'm proud of all of us for our accomplishment, and we got more to come, so y'all check us out. Hey man, remember that the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you, is sponsored by On the Shoulders of Giants, and On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through their On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, which is available on the website at www.ontheshouldersone.com, the On the Shoulders of Giants online courses, which is available at Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, as well as the On the Shoulders of Giants face-to-face classes, educational sessions, lectures, keynote speaking engagements, anything you need from On the Shoulders of Giants. All you got to do is reach out. The website is www.ontheshouldersone.com or www.ontheshoulders.org. That way you can learn any and everything you need to know about On the Shoulders of Giants. And my video is back. My video is back, so all my patrons on Patreon, my video is back. I got this video back for you, so it ain't just audio that people begin. You're going to get this video now. So if you want to see me as I'm doing this podcast and wilding out, make sure you are. This is one of the incentives for becoming a patron on Patreon. You get the actual Fix Sports Podcast video, not just the clip or not just the audio. You get the actual video. You get to see my mug and see me wilding, getting it in. And my Patreon, you can support me, www.patreon.com/thefix. So it's getting it in, and I'm excited because I'm going to have my homeboys, Patrick Irvin and Professor Carl Tone Jones, join me to talk a little boxing. So what we talking about today, Willie? What we talking about today? today, what we talk about today. HBCU Spotlight. We're going to give a shout out. I got two things in my HBCU Spotlight today. We're going to give a shout out to Miles College for winning the SEAC. That's my first. The second is Benedict Women. The Benedict College, their women beat Tuskegee to win the SEAC. We're going to talk about that. We're going to, when Patrick and Carl Tone Jones get on, we're going to talk about Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury 3. We're going to talk about Ryan Garcia and Javonte Davis. And we're going to talk about Clarissa Shields and Layla Ali. After that, we'll get into Dak Prescott's contract, the contract that was offered to Dak Prescott from the Cowboys, which some say is like the richest contract ever in NFL history. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into some college basketball rankings. We're going to get into week 5 of the XFL. After that, we're going to talk about the proposed expanding of the NFL playoffs. We're going to get into that. I know they were talking about 17-game seasons, too. And then in our weekly rant, we're getting into Spike Lee versus the Knicks, as well as ex-football player Jack Brewer called Donald Trump the first black president. So we're going to get into all of that stuff. There'll be that is our lineup for this episode 6. Season 5, episode 6 of the Fix Sports Podcast is really going down. But y'all know what time it is. Y'all know what time it is. This right here on that HBCU Spotlight there. Shout. You heard me? So as I said when I gave you my rundown, Miles College repeats as SEAC champions after disposing of Albany State. That's the headline. So stop if you heard this story. Miles College is the best in the SEAC. Are they trying to think of Miles College be doing their thing? You heard me? So Miles shrugged off a slow start with a furious finish to beat Albany State 69-56 in the SEAC championship game to win back-to-back conference titles. Jelani Weston Gale led the way for Miles with 22 points. Avery Brown added 18 points, and Frank Royals chipped in 14 as Miles erased a 16-point first-half deficit to win the title. Miles College answered the bell against Albany State. Albany State jumped out to a 29-13 lead midway through the first half before Miles closed the gap to 30-26. Albany State shot 47%. From the field, but it also turned the ball over 14 times. Miles translated that into 17 points. So 17 points off 14 turnovers, okay. Its bench also outscored its neighbor to the east 21-7. That's good. The win means Miles will become the first program to win football and basketball titles back-to-back since Alabama A&M did it back in the late 80s. That's what's up. Miles improves to 24-4 overall this season, 19-2 in the SEAC. Now it waits for its NCAA tournament appointment, which will be announced Sunday evening at 10 p.m. So, this upcoming Sunday, they will be doing the selection show for the NCAA tournament. So people going to see where they fall, people going to see what they get into and all like that. But, dang, Miles College, man, they're doing their thing. So, Miles College, Miles, said Edwin Miles College. So, Miles balled out on the boards. What was the final score? 69-56 to win back-to-back SEAC championships. Man, that's what's up, man. These boys be doing their thing. So, they won the SEAC and football and basketball. They won back-to-back titles in football and basketball. That's live. Miles out there doing that thing. That's C-I-A-C. C-I-A-C-C-X, all up in your face. Said C-X, baby, feedback. I want to see that C-X. She said she want to see that C-X, C-X, see that C-X. She said she want to see that C. She said she want to see that C-X, see that C-X, see that C-X. Oh, she said she want to see. So, hey, man. One time for Miles College. You heard me, for winning back-to-back CAC championships. Down there on that HBCU spotlight, that show, you know, somebody got to get that CAC championship there. So you already know how we do it right here on the Fix Sports Podcast. Y'all put your hands together for Miles College winning that back-to-back CAC. I put that CAC on that back-to-back. That CAC, back-to-back. I said I put my CAC in that back-to-back. You heard me? You can't talk in that jump, but I did not put that C-X in that back. She ain't got that C-X. She better, her ass ain't gonna be back. You heard me? I sexualize everything, I know. I know I sexualize everything. Giving her that good C-X so her can be that good B-back. You heard me? So that's the first part of my HBCU spotlight. The second part is Benedict College, their women, when they actually won the C-X tournament. So Benedict women's won that CAC. Oh, win that CAC. So Benedict answered the call from a pesky Tuskegee squad as it came away with an 85-72 win to bring home the CAC championship. It improved to 27-3 on the season and now awaits its seeding in the NCAA tournament. Ayanna Bay, the tournament's most outstanding player, scored 22 points and pulled down 14 rebounds in the title game. This girl named Waikira, wow. But that's one thing I love about this HBCU spotlight. These names. This girl named Waikira. W-Y-K-I-R-A. Waikira Johnson. Wow. All right, now. Waikira Johnson added 23 points and 8 rebounds for the Lady Tigers. The first half was nip and tuck from start to finish as the first quarter ended in a tie at 22-all. And Benedict held just a 35-33 lead at halftime. It held that lead despite shooting just 25% from the field. Things continued to remain tight into the second half until Benedict broke away with just under 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. What the girl name is? Shanasia. I don't know, man. What the hell the girl name is? Shanasia. Shanasia. Whatever. Miss White, her layup sparked the 7-0 run in just under 70 seconds and gave Benedict the cushion it needed. India Blakely, good, a regular name. India Blakely led Tuskegee with 21 points while three others finished in double figures as well. The champions will return home to Columbia to find out who will face the NCAA Division II tournament where it would take place. Really going down. What time for that Benedict for winning that CAC. That Benedict women got that CAC. So you know what that CAC do? Give that B back. So, man, y'all go ahead and put your hands together for Benedict women. You heard me, for winning that CAC. If you don't know, you better know. Miles College. Men. Benedict College. Women. Benedict Miles with that CAC. Boy, I sexualize everything. He Benedict Miles with that CAC. Hey, man. Hey, man, shout out to Miles College for that. Like, the back-to-back is incredible. And then shout out to Benedict for coming through with the victory, getting up to the slow start, but chipping away, getting everything they need, man. Y'all know how we do down here. Y'all know how we do, because we got to celebrate ourselves. Hell, if we don't celebrate us, who the hell is going to celebrate us? You know what I'm talking about? So, you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? That's how we do down here. But y'all know what I'm talking about? That's how I go down with that HBCU spotlight. I pinned it in my phone. Break it down for him. Now move your hips. You ain't moving your hips. You don't fit. There you go. You got to feel it in your spine. Just like that. Yes, sir. Oh, man. There you go, ma'am. Hey, you went and did something like that. for my HBCU spotlight. There, I share one time for Miles College and one time for Benedict College. And when I started singing this song, somebody got their ass whooped. Y'all know it's time to talk a little boxing, because somebody did get their ass whooped. Somebody might get their ass whooped coming up. So I got to bring my homeboys up on this podcast here, there, share. So I got Patrick Irvin and Professor Carlton Jones. What's up, gentlemen? Thank y'all for joining me up here on this Fix Sports Podcast. What it do? What it do?
What's going on, brother?
Man, brother? I'm chilling. Good. Oh, good. How you? What's going on?
Hey, brother. Talking about somebody getting their ass whooped. You better hope you don't get your ass whooped at those sisters here about how you talked about that the NCAA championship game.
Hey, man, look, I tried to say your name the best I could. I can't help your parents named you that. They might do come after me, though. What it is, Pat?
So you ain't go look at no news clips to see how they say their names or nothing?
Bruh, look at here. Ain't nobody got no clips to say how they say their names, okay?
Make your own clips, huh?
There you go. Hey, man, so I appreciate y'all joining me, man, so we can get into a little boxing. So three boxing topics. Of course, we want to talk Wilder Fury 3. Want to talk Tank Davis versus Ryan Garcia, a potential match, and also a potential match out of between Clarissa Shields and Layla Ali. Just kind of y'all ideas and things on that. But of course, you know, we got to start with Wilder Fury. We got to start with that. So I haven't had either one of you on. We've talked behind the scenes, but not on the podcast, about Wilder Fury 2. So I do want to kind of cover Wilder Fury 2 from y'all perspective and then kind of move to Wilder Fury 3 with all of its nuances and kind of get y'all ideas and thoughts on how that fight, in y'all's opinion, would turn out. So start with you, PC, man. Did you get a chance to see Wilder Fury 2? And if so, what was your thoughts on the total fight?
I saw enough. I saw enough. You know, the irony is, you know, being an old school boxer, so the way I was taught to fight was, you know, you stay busier than your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a power punch, that was an asset. But the power punch was never supposed to be, you know, your knockout punch was never supposed to be what you leaned on. It was
right.
An asset to your, you know, skills. But, you know, I'm looking at the size of these guys nowadays, and I don't know if they can actually keep up that old ethic of fighting. You know, because Mike Tyson used to be one of those fighters that was busy the whole fight. You know,
right.
I don't know if they can actually keep that up. And, you know, because these are some big guys. I mean, you know, you're talking about close to 300 pounds for one, and the other's over 300 pounds. It's like, geez.
Daddy boy,
yeah,
big.
Yeah, I saw the fight. Yeah. No, so, with that being said, I think Tyson Fury, you know, he definitely had a strategy going into this fight. You know, he kept his hands high, and, you know, he did a lot of feinting, and he moved Wilder back.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're used to being a hunter, it takes a whole different mindset to be the hunter, because now your footwork is different. You're not coming forward. So, yeah, you could land that big right, but it won't have the same veracity that it has when you're coming forward. So he immediately, in the first round, changed the whole game plan, I feel like, you know, Wilder. And once he did that, Wilder didn't have a plan B. Neither did his corner, obviously.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. You know, me and Pat talked extensively on the podcast about Wilder's, him being limited as a fighter, as a boxer, rather, him being limited, you know, with, like you saying, if your knockout punch is your main weapon, because my question has always been, okay, so what happens when somebody takes that right hand away? if somebody don't give him the opportunity to throw it, or if somebody just can eat that punch, what happens then? What type of fighter is he? And he's been exposed. So, Pat, what's your thoughts on the fight?
I mean, it's what we've been talking about for the last really few years. Wilder's a one-trick pony, and you know what happens when the trick don't work. You know, I think Wilder showcases the difference between somebody that can fight, like a street fighter even, and a boxer. Like, it's different. It's like the difference between somebody that can run fast and somebody that can sprint. Yeah,
right.
It all look like it mean the same thing to the casual person, but when you see somebody that can run fast, race a sprinter, you realize, oh, shit, this is different. And
right.
And we just saw what happens when somebody that can fight come up against a boxer. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And I know PC gave a good analysis, and he used to box, and so, you know, I ain't getting into all of that because, you know, that's been there. But the fact of the matter is, throughout Wilder's 40-plus fight career, he has been losing fights until he got that right hand on.
Right.
Like, that's been the story of Wilder's career, getting your ass kicked and landing that one punch. That's been the story of all of his fights that have gone longer than 30 seconds. All right? So, you know, Ortiz, you I ain't even got to go down the list. Even the motherfuckers, you'd be like, yo, he should whoop this dude ass. Even those dudes was beating his ass before he got that punch off. So, you know, for me, it's kind of been like, I never really got... I understand being excited about the power, and I understand being entertained by his ability to knock somebody's head off.
Right.
But, like, it just came to the point where it's like, come on, y'all are doing too much. Y'all are disrespecting the craft of boxing with a lot of the stuff you're saying. I expected him to get his ass beat the first fight because I watched Fury fucking stomp as in he was an enigma that couldn't be solved. I watched him do that to Klitschko. Like, Klitschko fought the worst fight he had ever fought when he fought Fury, and that's because Fury did a lot of the feints. He has a lot of awkward movements. It's hard to get a good line, clean shot on him. It's hard to get a good angle on him. The way he moves, he dictates the fight in a way where it's hard to get a clean shot on Fury. And the way he moves, he's twitchy. You just don't know what to do when it's great at neutralizing the aggression of the other opponent. So
right.
Coming into the fight, I was like, yo, the first fight, Wilder's done unless he gets lucky. He got lucky,
right.
Not lucky enough. Second fight, I was like, yo, same story. He's done unless he gets lucky. He didn't get lucky this fight, and Tyson Fury managed to put him on the back foot, which neutralized the power, and even further neutralizing it was he never gave Wilder the room to get fully extended on it. He was smothering the punches, and we talked about that when I was listening to the fight, because it's one of the few fights I actually listened to the announcers on, and they was like, Fury should take a couple steps back so that he could extend on his punches, and I was like, that's the worst advice ever. Yeah, he's smothering his punches, but he's smothering Wilder's punches too.
Right.
Fury's not a power puncher, so it's not a big deal for him to spin. So, but I think those two things combined, him smothering the punches and keeping him on the back foot, and now that he has the game plan, and they're supposed to fight again in, what, July? That's not enough time for Wilder to learn how to box. This man is 35 years old.
Well, before we get to that part, because I want to get to that part, but before we get to that part, I want to cover Wilder's excuse, because Wilder is saying that one, his legs were not under him the way they're supposed to be because he wore that Black Panther suit coming to the ring. And that had been video. Somebody put out a video of Wilder talking about how he trains with a 42-pound vest on, and that was about around the same weight of that suit that he came to the ring on. But just overall, what are you all's thoughts about that you think is bull, you think it's legit, you think he needs to shut the hell up? What you think about Wilder using that vet, that suit as an excuse? I think it's bull, but that's just me.
It was a bad look. I mean, what happened was, and really, you know, somebody should have whooped his ass in the locker room afterwards, because he kind of blamed his whole Black History communication, you know, on losing the fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things where you, once you get in the ring, there's no excuses. The better man won that night. And
right.
He would have came out looking more gracious if he would have just used a little humility and accepted that he lost to somebody who wasn't prepared to beat. His corner didn't prepare him to fight. You know, one of the things that, you know, and this is just one last analysis on the fight, Tyson Fury fought the fight that all big men have taught the fight. Use your size and your length. Don't get small for smaller fighters. Make them reach up to you. And what happens a lot of times, you see bigger fighters, they'll squat their knees and this, that, and the other, and they'll pinch their hips so that they can get, you know, be eye level with smaller fighters, which makes them vulnerable. He didn't do any of those things. And Tyson, you know, Wilder is a big man himself, so I'm pretty sure throughout most of his career, he's not used to fighting people that much taller than him. And having to fight a taller man, which changes your, you know, you go from being, you have to learn how to slip punches when you get that tall, when you're fighting somebody that much taller. You have to learn how to work under their jab, around their jab, how to counter their jab, because that's the best attribute. And the first punch that landed of any significance in that fight was the Tyson Fury jab. You know, Wilder caught the jab on the chin, and it seemed like it slowed his whole game plan out.
Yeah, he did.
So, but for him to blame it on the weight of the costume, then don't wear the damn costume. You know, I saw something else that probably prevented him from moving around, and the fact that when I saw at the beginning of that fight, he was bone dry. So he didn't work up enough sweat to loosen up. So it pretty showed that, you know, he was stiff, you know, moving around. I saw him trying to get his legs together, and he couldn't get his legs together. He was stiff. He just wasn't warmed up.
Right.
He could have blamed it on that. I would have rather him blame it on I didn't warm up properly than to make some, you know, BS excuse about the suit. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, blame Black History, huh?
Man, that shit, that fucking suit excuse. Not only was it trash, but I viewed it as disrespectful to Black people. For exactly what you just said. And I've been waiting on any of the talking heads to bring that up. But, not like, you basically blamed the fact that you lost on your history, on the fact that you were trying to celebrate your history.
Like, yeah.
Like, to me, that, I mean, we could do a whole show on the psychosis of that, the mind state of that, and how it really undermines all of the pro-Black talk you have allegedly been spewing out ever since the whole Jack Johnson, Donald Trump thing. Like, it really undoes a lot of that, and it really does a lot of damage to those people that look up to you in that way. It was a piss-poor excuse. I was with PC. I'm with PC in that if you want to say you weren't warmed up, that's fine. I live and die by track. I love boxing. I love track. Those are the only two sports I really watch. But, you know, being somebody that loves track, I know the damage that can come from not being warmed up properly for a race.
It can mess you up.
Go ahead.
It's like it can mess you up. You can pull something.
Yeah, especially being somebody that ran. Now, I never boxed on a serious level of any consequence. I went to a gym, like I told PC a little bit earlier. You know, I went to a gym, threw some hands, I got hit. You know, that was all in one day. I know from a standpoint of that it can have a major effect on a fight, but I can't say I've ever experienced it. But it makes sense that would be a reasonable excuse. But the fact of the matter is, you got your ass whooped. Like, wear it. Like, you was doing all that yapping when Anthony Joshua got his ass beat by Andy Ruiz.
Yeah.
Do all that yapping about this, that, and the third, and then you get your ass beat, and this is what you do. It's like, you face it, bro. You got your ass beat. The first time you got your ass beat, that should have been a little bit more embarrassing. This time you getting your ass beat, he could have honestly just worn this one. Like the first time it was, you know, because everybody's talked about it now. Fury was coming off a mental breakdown. He had lost over 150 pounds.
He was on drugs.
Like he was coming back into the game. He only had one or two tune-up fights. Like the first time with the draw, you should have been embarrassed by the draw. This time, there was nothing for you to be embarrassed about with this fight. There was literally nothing for you to be embarrassed about. After the draw, now he's had time to get in shape. He's really in fighting shape. All right, and that's why on the third fight, he's in shape. He's figured you out. He's done this. He's going to beat your ass again unless you get lucky and land that right. But, no, that shit, that fucking – and then fucking Black Panther ain't real, bro. Like, how many
times that's you got to say that? You know how I feel about that Black Panther shit. Like, Black Panther ain't real. Black people need to get over Black Panther, man. They really do. Stop blaming it on that. So now let me ask this. Do you all think the trainer threw the towel in too early, too late? Do you think he should have threw the towel in at all? Because I heard some banter about the towel being thrown in by the trainer. Of course, we know Wilder fired the trainer. But then I watched the video of a lot of people at Floyd Mayweather's gym, one of Floyd's uncles going around the gym asking people if the towel was thrown in too early. And most people kind of agreed with the trainer. But just y'all thoughts, you think the towel was thrown in too early and him firing the trainer was like a haste reaction or something?
It was more like an extension of the excuse. You know, the trainer honestly could have threw the towel in the first knockdown. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to win that fight. And I guess what he'd say is that he could have got lucky and landed a shot. Man, listen, you live to fight another day. Did he learn anything from Apollo Creed? I mean, come on. This,
Apollo Creed.
Another famous black fighter got his ass whooped by Russian. But,
yeah.
When you're reaching for straws, that's one of the things. Now, you wanted to fire the trainer because you didn't train right for this fight. You thought somebody else could motivate you. Let's not act like this doesn't happen in boxing all the time. Trainers and boxers are musical chairs, you know, in the whole arena of boxing. The timing could have been better. You know, right now he's just throwing that, you know, he's just grasping for straws right now. So, I mean, the third fight, the only reason I would even be intrigued is to see if he can actually land that right. But if he doesn't change anything strategy-wise, it's going to be – I don't know if he's going to make out of the second round. But the next fight, he actually had one.
I think his trainer should have threw in the towel about 10 years ago.
God damn.
Being honest, the moment you started trying to teach Deontay Wilder how to box and he started giving you resistance and saying, I don't need that shit, you should have threw in the towel then. You know what I'm saying? Like, Deontay Wilder has been on record for years saying, I don't do things that other boxers do. He don't jog. He don't do a lot of the conditioning work. He don't do a lot of the technique work. He don't do a lot of the tape study. He don't do a lot of the stuff that other boxers do because he's always had magic in his right hand. He's always had, you know, thunder and explosion and power in his right hand. And so he was able to get off. And I think, honestly, that plays a role in why, in between the rounds, you saw that his trainers really weren't saying nothing to him. Like, your fighter's getting his ass whooped. And y'all really ain't saying shit to him in between rounds. Like, that says a lot right there about the dynamic at work where they probably feel like we can't say nothing to him. He ain't going to listen. And then for him to be getting his ass whooped and then to come out of the ring and say, I'm firing my trainer because I always had the opportunity to land a right that you weren't even throwing at that point. You stopped.
Yeah, no, not in this fight. Yeah, not in this fight, buddy.
Like 3-4 rounds ago, bro.
That right was immobilized probably after the second round.
Right, and then even coming into the fight, he came into the fight looking for one punch, looking for the right.
Right.
The last fight, the last six or so rounds of the first fight, he was looking for that right. Every fight he goes into the fight looking for the right. Looking for the right. Look, that. So, I honestly, if his trainer, and I know, you know, to an extent they got to do what they got to do. I feel like it, just as far as this fight, I honestly feel like I agree with PC. After the first knockdown, the way the fight was just progressing, the way the energy was moving, he could have stopped it then, and I would have been cool with it. You know, he could have stopped it, you know, gave him another round after that first round to just see what was going to happen. He could have stopped it then. He could have stopped it when their legs got tangled, then Wilder fell because he looked kind of
yeah, like his equilibrium was off.
Yeah, he could have stopped it. Like, there were signs that this fight probably needs to be stopped way before that. But I honestly think all of this was built up to, you know, going back 10 years ago, he should have threw in the towel then, in my opinion.
So,
like, look, motherfucker, if you ain't going to listen, I'm not going to be in your corner.
So, shouldn't that be a third? Right. Shouldn't that be a third fight? Because I don't think it should be a third fight. I know the third fight is happening. We know it's happening. But should it be a third fight?
No, but top 10 division.
Well, because I want to see Fury Joshua now.
Would that even be a good fight? In terms of the money always dictates where the next fight is. And there's still a lot of Tyson and Wilder believers. There's still a lot of Wilder fans out there who believe that if he just gets a chance to land that one punch, they live off that one punch. But honestly, you know, I think this fight shows that it's not even a close competition. You know, this is like watching one of those lopsided Super Bowl victories in the 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, when the Super Bowl.
San Francisco, San Diego.
Right, you know, 55-10. You know, it's like, I don't think so. But,
yeah.
You know, money talks. And whoever has the power to promote will make it happen. So.
I agree. With PC, I don't want to see a third fight. And that's not to say that Wilder doesn't have an opportunity to win a third fight. When you got power like Wilder's, you always have a chance to win the fight. But I don't think we're going to see anything new. The fight is supposed to be happening in July. Wilder can't learn how to box in that amount of time, and even if
Floyd Mayweather gonna teach him how that defense, that Philly shell, by July.
No,
Floyd gonna do it.
One of the bigger problems with that is PC, you correct me if I'm wrong. In order for the Philly shell or any sort of counterpunching of any sort of kind to be effective, one, you got to be able to fucking fight with your eyes open. Wilder's still closing his eyes when he throw punches and when he see punches.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So you, how do you defend against something you can't even see?
Yeah, and that was something I noticed with both of them. They both were throwing a punch with their eyes closed.
I don't buy this whole, like, and here's the deal, like, even if he does go into the fight with a good understanding of what it is, also keep in mind he's 35 years old. His body ain't going to be moving the way he used to it moving anymore. But once that pressure gets applied to him, he's going to revert back to what he knows. And what he knows is head hunting and loading up that right hand. Now, I do want to see Joshua Fury, because those are the three big names in the heavyweight division. But you know me, Joe. I don't, like, fuck the heavyweight division, right? It's a weak division. It is.
It is.
But, you know, I'm not so sure. I think there is a version of Joshua that can beat Fury. I do think Joshua has a better chance to do it than Wilder does, but if Fury's on his A game, I'm not sure Joshua beats Fury either.
Well, Joshua can't come in there scary. Joshua has to come in there like and fight like a man, like be on his stuff, because if he come in there like he did with Ruiz, especially like that first time, you know he's going to get dropped. But Wilder versus Fury would be a big super British fight, because we know Joshua can feel. Huh?
You mean Joshua versus?
Yeah, Joshua. I mean Joshua Fury. That's what I mean, Joshua Fury. We know Joshua can feel stadiums. We know Fury can feel stadiums. Them two together will be a British super fight. So to me, that one needs to happen, especially if Fury go ahead and run through Wilder again. Joshua may fight somebody else. He win that. Bam, them two go ahead and fight. That's what I'm thinking.
Joshua's still the biggest draw in the UK right now. I don't think Fury surpassed him yet. But I think Fury is clearly a bigger name here in America. But if they fight in the UK, they could fill a 70,000-80,000-seat arena. Even,
right.
Because Joshua's
right.
already done that by himself.
Right. Right. So that's, to me, that's one of the things that's pushing that Joshua Fury, because even after the loss to Ruiz, Joshua is still in that top three. So, the Wilder, Fury, and Joshua, those three, we've seen what's going on. But Wilder has been exposed. So those of us who have been telling people this about Wilder, everybody see it now. So that kind of...
I want to say this because it's not even from a position of hate. Like, I get just as excited as everybody else when Wilder lands that right, because it's a fucking game changer. And everybody like watching somebody get their head knocked off. That's one of the reasons why, you know, we watch boxing, is to see somebody get their ass whooped.
Right.
But we also got to be honest about the people that we're watching. When I watch Wilder, I'm purely watching to see him land that right hand. I know that he really can't do anything else. So I don't get caught up putting him in these conversations and saying shit like Deontay Wilder can beat up Mike Tyson, or Deontay Wilder is a legendary heavyweight, or Deontay Wilder. No, you're looking at a man who hits really hard. But I got news for y'all. Deontay Wilder ain't even the hardest puncher in boxing right now. That goes to the monster. Look up the Japanese monster fighting way down there at featherweight. And I've seen, like I told Joe, I've seen that little motherfucker knock people across the ring on their ass with a punch that they blocked successfully. So,
yeah.
I mean, you want to see power? Go down and look at that little 120-pound motherfucker fight. And I know you're like, he's 120 pounds. Yeah, them little motherfuckers ain't expected to have a whole lot of power. So when you got a motherfucker knocking people through the ropes, out of the ring, knocking people out with punches that they blocked, knocking people out with glancing blows, that little motherfucker is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's different. That's different, though. So I got to check him out.
Like Doris Foreman.
you know what?
Doris Foreman used to drop people by punching them in the arm.
That is a great, you, and that, see, that's why I fuck with you, PC. Because that's exactly what it's like. And you watching a little ass, I think he's like 5'3", 5'4", 110, maybe 115 pounds. Just a little motherfucker. But he is doing damage. And the punches is fast. And they sending people flying.
Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me of Michael Moore when he was fighting as a light heavyweight. Before he moved up to heavyweight, he was hitting so hard. Nobody wanted to fight him. I mean, he was, people were blocking with both hands. He would get knocked across the room, not across the ring. And until he moved up to heavyweight, his punching power was unbearable. Virgil Hill wouldn't even fight him. Virgil Hill had the belt like 12 years.
Hey, you think about, he literally reminds me of guys like Prince Nassim. You remember him? He was trying Emmanuel Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
And Emmanuel said this dude used to hit harder than Lennox Lewis. They used to talk about how he would break both his hands in fights from punching people. Like, dude just hit hard as shit. And he was fast and he was athletic. Now, he ain't had no defense to speak of. That's why he ended up
right.
having that rock. But all the way up until that. So, like, even to that, like, the big guys are impressive with their power, and Deontay Wilder's power is impressive. I'm not even trying to. I ain't saying the motherfucker can't punch with that right. He can punch with. He probably could punch with the left, too. We just ain't seeing him do it. But he can punch with that motherfucking right.
He can.
I'm just saying that. It's other motherfuckers out there at lower weight classes that pound for pound arguably hit harder. So if you
really
somebody get their head knocked off, it's that shit is available for you too at the lower weight classes in addition to the skill. Just
so,
thinking that because he's big, he can dominate everybody.
So speaking of lower weight classes, Pat, this is something you brought to my attention. The young guy Ryan Garcia has been clamoring for about 2 years about fighting Tank Davis, Javante Davis. Now, I know, Pat, you and I already had a conversation about what you think about this, so I'm going to start with PC. PC, are you, first of all, are you aware of the Ryan Garcia, Javante Davis beef? And if so, who you think will win and why?
I just got 3 words. Don't do it. You know, I don't think Garcia, you know, and it's funny because they both have the same amount of fights. So it's
right.
As though they have the same type of experience. But you can clearly see that there's a class difference between fighters. Now, often,
right.
sometimes, you know, when the fighters get in the ring, they close up that gap, and it's something that's unexpected. But when you sit back and just look at the veracity and power of Javante, good Lord, you want to talk about somebody that knocks people across the ring.
Yeah, he does.
You know, he's a dynamic puncher, you know, and skillful. You know, he's not just, and I think, didn't he have like an amateur running as amateurs at one point where Garcia won? That might be where the hype is coming from. I could be wrong. That might be where the hype is coming from. But, no, I wouldn't, you know, the kid is too young. Garcia needs to, you know, build up his, first he needs to build his body up. Because, you know, I understand, you know, lean muscle mass and all that, and twitchy fighters, but you got to be able to take some punches, and especially from somebody that's you know that you're not going to knock out right away, you know. So my opinion is, man, he needs to wait on that because that's going to be something. That's something that could ruin a young fighter's career.
Yeah. I'm with PC. I don't think they fought as amateurs, but I could be wrong on that as well. That's something to look up. But I do, you know, they both do have extensive amateur records. But, you know, a lot of boxers that I've listened to, most of the boxers I've listened to speak to there being a distinct difference between fighting in the amateurs and fighting in the pros. You know, the gloves are different. The lack of headgear is different. You know, some of the rules are different to an extent. So, you know, but when you just look at development, Javante Davis is 25 years old. He's a 2-time world champion. He's been in there with the best. He hits like a fucking tank with both hands. He's skilled. He's fast. He's agile. He's young, he's hungry, he's from Baltimore, he's from Baltimore, he's from Baltimore, he's from Baltimore. you go down the list, like this is a kid who's had this fighting scrap, and even to that, even when he won his first title shot, you know, the confidence wasn't there. So he won the title belt not even believing that he deserved to be, or he belonged in the ring with the person he was in the ring with. And he still knocked the motherfucker out. Floyd Mayweather basically forced that on him. Said, nah, bro, you ready? He was like, no, I'm not. He said, yes, you are. Go fight. And he won. So you're looking at a dude who now has a proven record. He wasn't really groomed all that much before he was thrown to the wolves because he was a champion at 21 years old. And right now he's just a monster. He's just a savage. Then you look at Ryan Garcia, who I think just made 21 recently. he still has his teenage body. You know, he don't have his man body yet. He don't have his man strength yet. The only thing, I mean, hell, I think the boy still got acne. The only thing he got going for him is he's fast and he's tall. He's 5'10". Javonta Davis is 5'5". Reach could play a thing, but he also seems to be immensely immature. So, you know, even with that, the reach would only benefit him if he's mature enough to utilize it. If he decides he want to show people he can bang with the best and run in there with that monster, you know, then
going to get his ass whooped.
Yeah, so I'm in agreement with PC. Don't fucking do it, bro. Wait 4 or 5 more years. Let your body develop. Let your skill set develop. Tank will still be in his prime in 4 or 5 years, provided nothing happens. He'll only be 30 years old. That's still a good age where he's strong. He's still got his man strength. He hasn't started to decline. You'll be at a level to where you have the experience and your body's developed. Then it might be a good fight, provided y'all still in the same weight class.
So his dad, Henry Garcia, according to Tim Compton of Boxing 24/7, says that Ryan Garcia has confirmed that he'll be facing Javonta Davis in December. He said, Henry says, it's already agreed that Ryan will challenge WBA lightweight champion Tank Davis. Henry wants Ryan to fight possibly George Linares or Luke Campbell or Elise Selby first in the summer before taking on Tank Davis in December. The original idea was for the young 21-year-old to face former 3-division world champion Linares, but Henry questions whether Ryan will receive credit for beating him. So Linares is 34-year-old. But, I mean, yeah, I agree with both of you all. Like, Garcia, the only way Garcia wins is if Tank going there unprepared and just egotistical and just being stupid. That way Garcia will win. But if Tank on his game, coming there fighting like, and everything is focused, he gonna beat Garcia. He can actually box, and he got power in both hands, and he got that experience, and he got that body. Cause like my I've been debating with my intern, cause my intern don't think Tank Davis is a good fighter, and I'm like, how? He's like, well, he don't finish. I'm like, how he don't finish? And he got out of 24 fights or 22 fights, he got knockouts in almost all the fights except for one. So I mean, like, I was like, that's what I was saying. Like, how you saying he can't finish basically every fight except one was finished with a knockout. How you gonna say the dude can't finish? I was like, nobody's saying that Tank Davis is the best fighter out, but Tank Davis is one of the top 5-6 fighters out right now. Like, he is. So.
I go back to something PC told me a while back and has reiterated a lot lately. Don't argue with stupid people.
Yeah. I'm just like, Tank, a bad man. He's a bad man.
I think Ryan Garcia should maybe... It's a lot of up-and-comers in his weight class that he can fight. He can fight Devin Haney. You know, there are a lot of guys in that weight class that are up-and-coming that are good, solid prospects like him, a good, solid prospect that he could fight. Because, you know, everybody's looking at this in terms of saying, well, the only downside is that he loses the fight, but he still gains the experience. No, there's a lot more at risk when you – I mean, PC, you could – there's a lot more at risk in a boxing match than just having an L on your record. Like, this dude could literally get his ass whooped to the point where boxing is no longer even an option.
Yeah. Just aside from the medical thing, psychologically speaking, you're talking about if you absorb a certain type of beatdown, certain boxes are never the same.
Right.
You know, you never want to get back into the ring. You don't never want to experience that. And if you experience, you know, especially after being hyped up by your corner and your people, your promotion team, that you got this, you know, that you're this close to the pinnacle, and you could, you know, get your ass handed to you. Man, And it's not to say that you should be afraid of anybody, but, you know, you've seen people get the confidence beaten out of them, and then they become a shell of themselves later on. Now, I mean, he could shock the world and win the fight now and still even. I mean, I'll take it back to when Melvin Taylor fought Julio Cesar Chavez. You know, that was a great fight, and Melvin was robbed of it because Richard Still called that fight with 2 seconds to go. You know, instead of letting it go to the scorecards, which he was winning. But, Mel Taylor was never the same fighter after that. Mm-hmm. And he went on to win championships and this and the other. He was never the same fighter after that. That fight took so much out of him that, you know, in the ring, like, you could see his cognition skills had declined. You could see he wasn't able to get in and out of combinations. He wasn't able to, you know, throw his punches and reset. Dip punches that were coming back, you know, you could see that a lot of those things go, and he became a sloppier fighter, you know, and you could see, like, you could see that there was a certain level of clarity that he had lost. When you watch the first film, if you ever watched the film of that fight with Chavez, he was sharp, in and out, in and out. I mean, Chavez was steady coming, you know, like a locomotive with body punches and, you know, so he was steady the whole fight. But, you know, there were times in that fight where, you know, the star, who Melvin Taylor was shining. And you could see gradually throughout that fight, Julio Cesar Chavez beating the hell out of that star. And, you know, by the time that fight was over, the fighter you saw Melvin Taylor become the last 2-3 rounds was the fighter you saw for the rest of his career. Mm-hmm. You know? And, you know, people don't take that into account. And you have a young fighter who's dazzling, who sprung and bounces off his feet. And those cognition skills are important because that's how you slip those punches. You don't slip those punches. You slip those punches, you see them, and you move quickly. You know, it becomes reactionary, but it's like you see a shadow or something and you react to it in a way that puts you in the upper echelon of fighters. Once you lose that, you become a lot easier to hit. That changes shit. So,
I mean, another example of that is Adrian Broner. He hasn't been the same fighter since El Chino, Marcos Madonna, whooped his ass. He has not been the same fighter. I know that PC was talking about he could win the fight. But, you know, Adrian Broner is an example of a fighter not necessarily being health-wise destroyed, but just psychologically destroyed, where he just never, and he never will be the same fighter again. Now, all that's to say, the fight is in December. A lot can happen in a year. I would be interested in how he does against Linares, especially considering what we saw, what we know Linares is capable of. You know, he had a pretty good showing against Lomachenko.
Yeah, he did.
I would be interested to see how he does. And honestly, if you're going to put this kid in the ring with those types of, with experienced and dangerous people, you may do want to put him in the ring with guys who are past their prime. That way they could learn some things and still, you know, not necessarily be subject to anything extremely, extremely brutal. So I would be interested in a Linares fight or in another guy that might be a little bit over the hill. I don't think that's a bad strategy. I just don't, like, from what I've seen of Ryan Garcia right now, it is just not, I don't think that it's a smart decision. But, again, he get in the fight in summer and whoop some ass, you know, we might be having another conversation where it's like, yo, Ryan Garcia might be, you know, maybe I still think that Tank is going to win, but it would be
more ready.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, well, we're going to see, man. Definitely say they're fighting in December. So according to this article, everybody's agreeing it's going down in December. So we're definitely going to keep our eyes on this and talk about this. So last thing I want to cover with you all, Layla Ali, Clarissa Shields. Should it happen? So PC, are you up on the full story of how these two got going back and forth?
Not really. Give me a little bit of history on this.
All right, so Layla Ali was on the Breakfast Club, and they asked her would she come out of retirement and fight. And Layla was like, if the money was right, she would come out, but then she did go on and said that there are no women in boxing right now who she think could beat her, who could challenge her. So none of them would make her come out. So it was a general shot at everybody. It wasn't a specific Clarissa Shields shot. It was a shot at everybody. So when Clarissa Shields got a chance to talk in public, she responded as if Layla Ali was talking specifically to her. And so that's when Clarissa Shields just started firing back at Layla, saying she'll beat her ass, she want to fight. And then next time Layla got a chance to fight, she was like, hey, you put up like, I think it was like $5 million or $9 million or something like that, and she'll fight Shields. And, you know, Shields was like, well, you old, you ran from Ann Wolf, all these different things here. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I want to see it because I think they're strengths and weaknesses in both. I do think I think Shields is the better polished boxer. I think Layla has the more power. But what do you think? Like between them two, Layla Ali at 42 years old, young Clarissa Shields in her prime, the best woman in boxing right now. Who you think will win?
Well, one of the things that's funny. First of all,
yep.
How they got there.
Right.
Because honestly. If I was still boxing, I would have took that as a shot too. Especially if I was a champion, I would have took that
right.
as a shot. But I kind of, you know, I'm looking at it from a different perspective, and I don't know. Maybe these two had a conversation beforehand and decided
maybe.
That they could find a way to finesse some money out of a potential matchup between two fighters that got about 18 years between them. You know,
right.
if they were actually to engage in a fight, I would like to see Layla in the prelim first. You know, to see her in a warm-up fight first to see if she's back to where she was before making an assessment, a true assessment of the fight between the two. Because, first of all, I know they're both in two different weight classes, right?
Yeah.
So, Layla has been, she's one of those sisters that's able to carry some weight on her and still look good. And, man, does she look good. But,
yeah.
Take anything away from her skills, her skill level, but if she's Layla Ali of old, it'll be a real interesting fight only because she's what? Layla's what, 6'2"? And Clarissa Shields is what, like 5'6", 5'8"?
Well, Layla's
5'10". 5'10", okay.
She's quite a super middle, though, so they're in similar weight classes because I think Clarissa fights at middleweight.
Okay. So, I think it will probably be the best fight of either one of their careers. They'll both be facing the best opponent either one of them has ever faced. If Layla comes back and she's the old Layla, you know. So, it's a good fight. I mean, I like the fact that they were smart enough to finesse this to the point where they got hyped to the point where they're actually considering actually making this thing real. You know,
right.
Kudos to them.
Right. I'm not mad at Shields for biting back at it because it's a smart move to help bring more shine on her and women's boxing. Especially if she wins. So
I do. From the angle PC presented, I think it was smart to. I think, and Joe, you said Clarissa to snap back the way she did. And we talked before, I felt like it was a shot. You know, it wasn't aimed, but it was clearly a shot. You know, what she said about, you know, nobody being nobody to come back to. I think if they're going to do it, Frazier's daughter was 38 when she fought Layla Ali, who was, I think, 23 or 24 at the time. So, you know, you got a similar age gap there. where she could say, you know, well, she did the same thing that Frazier's daughter, even though the argument there would be she was boxing before Frazier's daughter really got involved in boxing. But that's neither here nor there. I think it'd be an interesting fight. I just looked up because when PC was talking about their sizes, I was like, that's interesting because I hadn't really considered how tall Layla was. And I thought Layla was over 6 feet as well. But then
yeah.
I went and she's listed at 5'10". I was like, oh, well, that. Because Clarissa's like 5'7", 5'8". So it's not going to be as big of a height advantage. And then, you know, Clarissa fights at middleweight. Layla fought at super middleweight. So, you know, and with women, you know, they can. As much for women, they got to go wherever they can get the fight. So if that
yeah.
means you fighting somebody that's 20, 30 pounds heavier than you, then that's what the fuck you doing. So, you know, but and I know when we talked about it before, I was just like, yo, it depends. If Clarissa come in and box, then, you know, she's going to win. If she getting a trade-off with Layla, then she's probably not. Because, you know, we said before, Clarissa don't have knockout power. At least not right
at
now.
At all. No, she don't.
But every fight, she's getting noticeably better. Her defense is getting better.
Her defense significantly improved the last two fights.
The punches are getting sharper. And the result is that they start to get harder. There's more snap on them. She's sitting down on them better. She's moving better. She's learning how to box right before our eyes. You know, and not to say she didn't know how to box before because she was a gold medalist. But her skills are dramatically improving right before our eyes. Layla needs a tune-up fight. And that would tell us everything we need to know. I agree with PC about that. And that's something I hadn't said or thought about just because in women's boxing, you know, they kind of fight going to happen. It just happened. But, you know, even in that, like, there's no reason why we should treat these women different than we would treat men. If this was a man situation, people would be like, give her a tune-up fight. In this situation, she needs a tune-up fight. She needs something that, and then that'll allow us to better gauge it. I would say, though, I think the fight I think makes is Clarissa Shields versus Cecilia Brackus. Brackus, for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, has really been the queen of women's boxing. She is that chick. She fights at welterweight, and she's been proclaimed the king of boxing, the queen of women's boxing for a number of years. She's 38 years old. She fights at welterweight. She's 36-0. I want to see Clarissa Shields fight her. Especially after Clarissa Shields fought, what was the old girl's name? Hannah Gabriel.
Yeah, because Gabriel knocked her down.
Right. After the Hannah Gabriel's fight, and then even with her most recent fight against Ivana and Hammer, because she fought Hammer and then she fought Ivana after Hammer. Both of those were impressive showings. I want to see her in the ring. If she does to Cecilia Brackus what she's been doing to everybody else, at that point I would be like, I don't think it matters how Layla Ali comes back. She's not going to fucking beat Clarissa. But if Cecilia Brackus pushes her and even wins the fight, then I think that opens the door for, because I think Cecilia Brackus has the skills and the ability to expose any glaring weaknesses that Clarissa Shields has. She could give the blueprint for how to beat her.
It's another young woman boxer who been calling out Clarissa, who want to fight her. I can't think of her name right now. But she's a young chick who don't really have, she's like the interim champion right now. I can't remember her name, but she's a young black chick who been calling out Clarissa. He been telling her to sit her ass down because she ain't even got enough fights upon her belt. But
Clarissa only got 10 fights.
Well, this other chick got less fights than that.
But I'm saying, at 10 fights, you ain't got enough fights to tell somebody they ain't got enough fights to fight you.
Well, that's what Clarissa been doing, though.
I heard PC do the thing, so you disagree with that?
No. I was laughing. So, nobody in women's boxing right now is doing it. It's like the WNBA. You got some skilled players in there, but it's still, you still dollar wise, y'all ain't getting y'all not getting the attention of your male counterpart. Any good fight that's there, you need to take. And that's not a sexist response. That's a be real response, you know, to what you get out there. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of these a lot of female athletes, you know, they sort of feel slighted, but when you're in entertainment, then who you're entertaining pretty much has, you know, they pretty much have all the power behind who gets seen, who gets viewed, and so you got to compete with a superior product, even though men's boxing sucks. You know, it's just traditionally speaking, that's what everybody follows. So you got to do something to buck that, and the only way to buck that is to take the best fight. And that's the best fight out there, because I saw the knockdown. You know, that was a poised fighter who, that was a good fight. Anyway.
Yeah, it was a good fight.
But I want to go back to something you were speaking on earlier, Pat, in regards to the power. Because what I noticed is, you know, and this is, in the ring, too. You know, I've been in the ring with some power punches and people who are sharp punches. Those sharp punches hurt more because they hit you on a spot. Like a power punch eventually will wear you down. But, you know, those sharp punches, they kept you right. They'll jar something loose in you. So, you know, now, I mean, especially if you catch somebody leaning the wrong way, you know, so I wouldn't necessarily go to that point with you know, dealing with somebody with power punches of saying that, you know, one might be more, because Layla is a power puncher. Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lying that.
Yeah.
You know, but if you get around that, you get around laying something sharp, you know, and the one thing I liked about Clarissa is, no, because I spoke about Meldrick Taylor. Clarissa reminds me of Meldrick Taylor.
That's a good
analogy. What she really reminds me of is Meldrick before Chavez. Mm-hmm. We wanted to talk. Because Meldrick was in and out with those combinations fast, but he wasn't a power puncher, but he was sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he would knock people out, because he would catch you with a four-punch combination, but by the time you caught that fourth punch, it was sharp. The other three punches buttered you up. And it would, you know, cause some damage. That's kind of what she reminds me of when I watch her box. So,
yeah,
it was a good fight.
Meldrick Taylor, I was like, oh, I never even put that together. But, yeah, I can definitely see that. But, you know, that's Floyd Mayweather, not a power puncher, but a sharp puncher. You know,
mm-hmm.
And you're right from the perspective of what I've seen anyways. I ain't been in the ring, but from what I've seen,
okay.
Sharp punches do a lot of damage.
The young fighter I found in that, Raquel Miller. Y'all heard of her before, Raquel Miller?
I heard of her now.
It was she's saying she want to fight Shields because she's trying to jump in off the Shields Ali momentum and saying, well, why you want to fight that old lady when you can't fight, when you should fight me? So
Raquel Miller, is she 35 years old? Am I looking at the right thing?
She made a black chick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing. That should be the same.
35 years old, got 10 total fights. She 10-0.
Yeah. That should be. R-A-Q-U-E-L Miller.
Clarissa really ain't got no room to tell her that she need to get more fights under her belt. But y'all got the same amount of fights, baby. Stop it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the head get a little too big, man. No.
Yeah, like that, and that's not good. Like that's not a good sign.
Yeah, she's the interim. Yeah, she's the WBA interim female super welterweight title holder. Well, the interim person.
Back to what PC was saying, though, that's also the way you build a sport. You take the fights that are available to fight, and you know, because women's boxing don't want the reputation that men's boxing has of people cherry picking and block. Nah, women's boxing needs to be different. You know, it needs to be you fight. Women fight whoever's on the, you know, like they'll fight whoever. They already kind of have that reputation that women will fight whoever because they have to. The last thing we need is the snobbiness of men's boxing to creep into women's boxing where now you got women saying, I'm not going to fight you because you ain't on my level. Nah, bitch, she ain't on your level. Beat her ass.
Well, that's what, that's kind of like where Raquel Miller is with Clarissa. Like, forget all that tough talk. Like, fight. But it's interesting. Say the other lady name that you said that was undefeated. Pat.
Oh, Cecilia Brackets. I was talking to you about her about 2 or 3 years ago when we started talking about.
She
was on a serious level.
Yeah, so I got to go check out Brackets.
I just shared her boxer rec thing in the you know in our little discussion group.
Okay, yeah, I see it. I'm gonna check that out after this, after I jump off this cast. And, man, I appreciate y'all jumping on this with me, man, chop up some boxing, man. I'm gonna call this Talking Boxing Shit. This is gonna be the name of this from now on, Talking Boxing Shit. And then y'all the boxing experts, because I'm not the boxing expert, but y'all the boxing experts, but I like to talk boxing shit, man. So definitely appreciate y'all. Hey, PC, huh?
I don't know about experts, bro, but I damn sure give you my opinion.
There it is. PC, give people information about what you got going on, where they can get your documentary and all that.
Oh, yes, brother. We still got the documentary popping. You know, consider, man, we just going to take over all these months. Right now, man, I haven't changed the price. The Independence Day Project, you can still get it for $15 if you order plus shipping and handling. Or if you want to download a digital download, you can go to the website, blackindependence.org. That's blackindependence.org. And you get a copy of the Independence Day Project. It's the project where we ask two questions. What does an independent black community free of white supremacy look like to you? And what are we going to do about building it? So, you know, thank you once again, brothers, for having me on. I always love being on, you know, the broadcast and so forth. So I appreciate you, brothers. Let me sit in for a ride.
Ain't no thing, no thing. Pat, tell them about your book, where they can get it and all that stuff that you got going on.
Well, you get the first edition of the book on Amazon. Audio book will be out soon. You can get it where you're at.
What's the name of your book?
I just said that, The Chasm.
Oh, no, well, it went out. So can you say it again? It went out.
So the name of the book is The Chasm, and it's a book that basically details the history of the relationship that black men and women have with each other, and it also, you know, in the ass half of the book, try to give us some solutions for things that we could do to kind of break the narrative before the narrative becomes truth and finishes breaking us, because right now the narrative ain't real, but it's quickly becoming real. So we when the audio version is done, which will be once the second, the final edition is done, which will be here in a couple of weeks, drop the audio book. You'll be able to get that on Amazon as well. And then you'll also be able to get it on my website at www.thepatrickirvin.com. And you'll also be able to get it in the pack store, and everything sold in the pack store will go directly to the pack's organization. So,
hey, there it is, man. Once again, man, I appreciate y'all fellas for jumping on this with me and riding out, and I'll definitely talk to both of y'all real soon.
Yes, sir. All
right. Y'all be safe, man.
Hey.
Sure.
And tell that dude that messed up my edge last time I was in here to go kill himself.
There you go. There you go, edge man. Kill yourself. All right, fellow. Yeah. Yeah, one time for Professor Carl Tone Jones and Patrick for joining me for my talking box and shit segment. That's what I'm going to call it because I can't think of nothing else. So talking box and shit. I mean, y'all remember to support your homeboy on Patreon at www.patreon.com. That way you can get the video of this podcast, not just the audio portion that most people will get. You'll be able to be exclusive and get the video of it so you can see me all animated and stuff moving around. All right, so let's get this thing moving. So we can't be in here all day, right? So the Cowboys reportedly, according to Inside Hook, by Evan Bleer, the Dallas Cowboys offered Dak Prescott the richest contract in NFL history. And so the Cowboys are willing to guarantee the 26-year-old $105 million. Let's read. So in order to keep one of their biggest stars in the Lone Star State, the Dallas Cowboys are reportedly willing to offer up the richest contract in the history of the National Football League. Dun, dun, dun. So, according to Calvin Watkins of the Dallas Morning News, the Cowboys have offered quarterback Dak Prescott a contract with an average value of $33 million per year. With this, Dak, you signed this contract, $33 million a year. We need at least three Super Bowls from you, bro. $33 million a year? We need at least three Super Bowls from you. So, as part of this deal, the Cowboys are willing to guarantee the 26-year-old $105 million. Dak, we need at least three. You signed this contract. We need at least three Super Bowls from you, bro. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. If Prescott chose to sign a deal, it would be the richest contract in league history in terms of guaranteed money at the time signing, besting the Pats quarterback, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. I don't know why to say it like that. For Prescott's deal, the devil will reside in deals like signing bonuses, fully guaranteed salaries, and fully guaranteed roster bonuses and other fully guaranteed payments, according to the Pro Football Talk. Regardless, an average value of $33 million per year will put him at the top of the all-time contractual stack. If Prescott doesn't accept the offer, it's possible the Cowboys will resort to using the franchise tag to keep him in Dallas. It's a ridiculous amount of money to be sure, but the Cowboys and owner Jerry Jones can afford it. Though the Cowboys went 8-8 last season and failed to qualify for the postseason, Dallas still is one of the NFL's most popular teams, and the organization is estimated to be worth more than $5.5 billion. $105 million total contract, $33 million. You're Dak Prescott, boy. I wonder if he's going to sign it, but I'm not saying Dak don't get paid. Because that need to get paid. I want that. You know I want people to get their money. I want that to get paid. But I also want to make sure that we got enough money moving forward to have a good team, to surround Dak with talent. So Dak need to get his money, but other contracts and stuff need to be worked out too, because I want Dak to have weapons and great talent surrounding him. Him not just being, that quarterback with all that damn money. I don't want no Sam Bradford. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to see like I want to say Dan Orlovsky, one of them quarterbacks who like the quarterback get paid, he'd be mediocre, because that I think Dak is better than mediocre, but Dak ain't no top tier quarterback, right? But what I don't want to happen is Dak get this money and then everything just go down here because he ain't balling. I want Dak to get this money and Dak ball out. I'm a Cowboy Nation right here. So I'm thinking about everything. I want a great supporting cast around my quarterback. I really do. I just don't want no bullshit going on in Dallas, man. Pay the man, but make sure we can keep our squad together, or make sure we can keep our squad tight, keep some talent on our squad, because we got a lot of people we got to pay. We do got a lot of people we got to pay, but at the same time, people do got to get their money. Dak needs to get his money. You know, I'm all about people getting their money. I'm thinking players should have that mercenary mentality rather than trying to be team first. I think they should have that mercenary mentality and be able to go out and get what they need at times, right? Not just be so team first that you keep shortchanging yourself on getting your money, especially when you're putting your body on the line. Get your money. So this article came out when? Today. The article came out today at 10 a.m. today. So we're going to see what happens. I haven't been able to watch SportsCenter. I haven't watched SportsCenter yet. I haven't really looked at too much sporting news. I tried to do a little bit earlier today, but didn't really have time. So I'm have to go through. But I want to see what goes on with this deal with Dak Prescott and Dallas Cowboys. I got to keep my eye on that. I want him to sign it. I definitely want him to sign it. But because that's going to be goddamn. That's a lot of money. $103 million, $33 million guaranteed per year. $105 million, excuse me. $105 total guaranteed. Guaranteed $105 million, $33 million per year. I ain't mad at you, Dakery. I ain't mad at you at all, bruh. But I need some winning, though. We need some winning. We got Mike McCarthy. We got Jason Garrett out of there. We got Mike McCarthy in there. So I want to see what Mike McCarthy do with this talent that we got with Coop and Gallup. And then we got Randall Cobb. We need a new tight end, though. We need to get rid of Jason Witten and get us a new tight end. Need to make sure our offensive line is healthy and shored up so Zeke can tote that rock. And our defense needs to show up to play. So we went 8-8 last year and missed the playoffs. Unacceptable. How about them Cowboys? How about them Cowboys? There it is, man. So Dak Prescott, well, I'm expecting him soon to sign this deal and be the richest quarterback, or the richest player in NFL history. I ain't mad at you, Dak. I ain't mad at you. I ain't mad at you. So we're just waiting to get more information. Once I get more information on this, it'll be good. We can debate whether Dak is worth the money. I think he's earned money. I'm not going to debate whether he's – I'm not going to get into it right now whether he's earned this money, even though I really don't think he's earned this type of money, but Dak has definitely earned money because statistically – last season was good, and he's had winning seasons, been to the playoffs twice. So he's earned it. We're going to see. We just need Super Bowl wins. This big D, though. We need Super Bowl wins in Dallas. That's what we need. But we do also need a full squad. We need a full team. We need to make sure we got enough money to build a full team, to maintain a full team. So that's where I'm at on that. But one time for Dak Prescott. Hey, man, real quick. Well, not real quick, but I want to talk college football rankings. A lot of things have changed. March Madness is here. It is March, so it's time to start talking about college basketball and start talking about the tournament and everything that's going on. So we know we got the selection show coming up on Sunday, so that means we have conference tournament. So FSU was a regular season champion. I think tournament should be coming up. The ACC and the other conference tournament should be coming up soon. So Iowa's number 25, Butler number 24, West Virginia number 23, Houston is number 22, Illinois is number 21, Auburn is 20, Ohio State 19, Wisconsin 18, Virginia 17, Seton Hall is 16, Louisville is 15, BYU is 14, Oregon is 13, Maryland 12, Virginia 11, Duke 10, Michigan State 9, Kentucky 8, Creighton 7, San Diego State is 6, Baylor's 5, Florida State is 4, Dayton is 3, Gonzaga 2, Kansas is number 1. Trying to see if the actual tournaments, because I ain't gonna lie, act like I've been following it as close as I probably should, but NCAA tournament, let me see, 2020 NCAA basketball, 2020 conference. Conference tournaments, so conference tournaments are about to start. So, according to CBS Sports, conference tournaments are going to start. So the AAC conference tournament is March 12th through the 15th. And what are those exact days? So that's Thursday through Sunday is the AAC tournament. The ACC is March 10th through the 14th, so ACC starts tomorrow, Tuesday. America East is the 7th, 10th, and the 14th. The Atlantic 10 is 11th through the 15th. Atlantic Sun is the 3rd, 5th, and 8th. The Big East is 11th through 14th. Big Sky is 11th through 14th. Big South is the 3rd, 5th, 6th, and 8th. The Big 10 is 11th through 15th. Big 12 is March 11th through 14th. Big West is 12th through the 14th. Colonial is 7th through 10th. Conference USA is 11th through 14th. Horizon League is the 3rd through the 10th. Ivy League is the 14th through and the 15th. The MAAC is the 10th through the 14th. The MAC is the 12th through the 14th. The MEAC is the 10th through the 14th. Missouri Valley is 5th through the 8th. So Missouri Valley playing now. Oh, they done. They're done. Mountain West is 4th through the 7th. Northeast is 4th through the 10th. Ohio Valley, 4th through 7th. Pac-12 is 11th through 14th. Patriot League is the 3rd through the 11th. SEC is 11th through the 15th. The Southern is 6th through the 9th. The Southland is 11th through 14th. Summit is 7th through the 10th. Sunbelt is 7th through the 15th. SWAC is 10th through the 14th. The WAC, WAC, is 12th through the 14th. And the West Coast is the 5th through the 10th. So those conference tournaments coming up. Let's see. Regular season. NCAA basketball regular season champions. Basketball regular. RGULAR regular season. Conference. I regular season conference champion. Let me see. Conference tournament schedules. I don't know. I ain't got all that time right now to go look all that, but trying to find the regular season conference champions or whatever. But I get that information. I try to, because by the time I make my next show, the actual NCAA tournament will be there. So that's more important. I know FSU won the ACC. I do know that. So that's NCAA basketball. Like I said, I have more coming up because it's about time to start talking about it. All right, so we got week 5 of the XFL. And if you haven't watched the XFL, you're tripping because the XFL is good football. It's very fun and exciting. You got to check out the XFL, especially your boy P.J. Walker. P.J. Walker looking like he's going to be the XFL MVP. So through the first half of the season, he's the XFL MVP. Right? Let's see if I can find these scores real quick. Let me see. But they're winners, so... hold on. Let me see. All right. So week five of the XFL. Yeah, the Houston Roughnecks against the Seattle Dragons. Then you had the New York. The Saturday, because they play Saturday and Sunday. So week five, Saturday, Houston Roughnecks versus Seattle Dragons. Then you had the New York Guardians versus the Dallas Renegades. So Houston Roughnecks continue. They are undefeated. Houston Roughnecks are 5-0. They're undefeated in the XFL. And they got that fifth victory over the Seattle Dragons, which is a pretty good team. And B.J. Daniels, who went to Lincoln High School here in Tallahassee, Florida, is the coach of – is the starting quarterback now for the Seattle Dragons. So let me see. Trying to find some stats. They gotta do better with these XFL stats and shit, though. But, all right, so anyway, the New York Guardians, they beat the Dallas Renegades 30-12. on that Saturday. So Sunday at BC Defenders versus St. Louis Battlehawks, then at the Los Angeles Wildcats versus the Tampa Bay Vipers. Excuse me. So the BC Defenders defeated the Battlehawks, the St. Louis Battlehawks, 15-6, and the Los Angeles Wildcats beat the Tampa Bay Vipers in the shootout, 41-34. So it went down. So I bet you that was a good game to watch. That, so those winners and losers, week five of the XFL. So really going down, man. If y'all ain't checked out the XFL yet, y'all really do need to check out the XFL. Real quick. So the NFL is contemplating on expanding the playoffs to 7 teams in the playoffs. The top seed will have a bye, and so the first, you know, you still have 6 games going on, and the winners and losers from that will eventually go and get to play the one seed. So let me read a little bit. The NFL's current playoff format is largely considered one of the best in sports, and the number of teams is ideal. Those with the best records are rewarded with byes and matchups against the lower seeds. Upsets are inevitable, but generally the champion the bracket produces is deserving and representative of its true superiority over the rest of the league. Beyond some issues with seeding, the NFL's playoff format is perfect. So obviously it's time for a change, right? According to this article, I think the NFL don't have the greatest playoff system. As the NFL and NFLPA work to finalize the new collective bargaining agreement, ESPN reported Wednesday that within the terms of the proposed CBA is a change to the league's playoff format. The NFL wants to add 2 games to the postseason schedule, 1 game and 1 team per conference. Add 2 games to the postseason schedule, of course, is slang for add chances to collect more bread. So Adam Schefter tweeted, the NFL hasn't adjusted the playoff format since 2002 when the Texans joined the league and the NFL split into 8 14 divisions. 6 playoff teams in each conference has been around since 1990. A source told ESPN the playoff format change has been agreed to for a long time, and there wasn't a lot of disagreement around the league of expanding the field for the postseason. But the league is not just adding a couple games to the playoffs. More changes will come if this edition of the CBA is finalized and an agreement is reached. Below are the changes details. So how many teams would make the playoffs? All right, so let's break this thing down, right? So the new format will add 1 team to the playoff field in both the AFC and the NFC, making it a 14-team postseason, 7 teams per conference, rather than the 12-team format. As ESPN notes, had the playoff proposed format been in place in 2019, the Steelers would have reached the AFC playoffs and the Rams would have reached the NFC playoffs. So here's how last season's playoff bracket would have looked under the proposed postseason format, assuming the NFL's current seeding tactics. Right, so this would have been for the AFC. The top seed would still have been the Ravens. You had 7 teams. You had the Ravens, Chiefs, Patriots, Texans, Bills, and Titans. And the NFC would have been 49ers, Packers, Saints, Eagles, Seahawks, Vikings, and Rams. So we're talking about divisional playoffs and wild card. You would have, let me read. Let me not guess. Okay, the question critics of this proposal were raised, did Pittsburgh, which limped to the end of the season after a series of quarterback injuries in Los Angeles, deserved to make the playoffs. If the newly proposed playoff system were in place, the last 10 years would have added 5 10-win teams, 9 9-win teams, and 6 8-win teams. So the teams is messing that part up. And so so the current playoff format, of course, allows 2 teams in each conference to benefit from first-round byes. That's why the 49ers' goal line standing against the Seahawks in Week 17 last season was such a massive play. It allowed the Packers to jump the Saints for the number 2 seed. New Orleans ended up losing its wild card game in Minnesota, and Green Bay reached the NFC title game. This was a great reward for the top seed in each conference, but some are wondering whether it's too strong of an advantage. 6 games on wild card weekend, so that's what I was getting to. So on wild card weekend, there will be 6 games on the new proposed playoff format. So here's the moneymaker. In addition, the addition of a playoff team and the subtraction of a first-round bye in each conference means 2 extra playoff games on Wild Card Weekend. According to ESPN, the players on the teams that earn a first-round bye will receive postseason pay for that weekend, too. Yet, as NFLPA executives committee vice president and current 49ers cornerback Richard Sherman notes, it's never that simple. So this is something from the NFL CBA. Obviously, this is from Andrew Brandt. Obviously, owners want extra regular season playoff games and are spending it to the players and the media as more games, more money. It's much more complicated than that, and players need true concessions, but they seem to have this leverage owners want to build now. So, and the regular season is being proposed to increase to 17 games, and the preseason shortened to 3 games. So that's what's being proposed, a 17-game season and 14-team playoff format, with wild card weekend being 6 games and one team having the postseason. So we're going to see how that goes with this new CBA, see if people go for it or they don't go for it. So, hey. It's time for my weekly rant. Yes, sir. This week, we got 2 topics in the rant. First topic, Spike Lee beefing with the New York Knicks. And I'm going to tell you why I put this in the rant after I go through the details. So let me read. There are many reasons why a fan of the New York Knicks might become embroiled in a public feud with the notoriously mismanaged franchise, the team trading away its best young player to save money under the salary cap. Our sources inside Madison Square Garden whispering for months about the supposedly imminent arrival of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, neither of whom will ultimately sign with the team. Instead, both stars, the NBA's most archetypal millennials, decided to team up at the hip co-working space on Atlantic Avenue. For other fans, the final straw was the Knicks choosing to use their newfound financial flexibility to sign 17 power forwards, none of whom knew how to pass the ball. All would be valid reasons for denouncing the Knicks, but these are not reasons that Spike Lee, the world's most famous Knicks fan, has announced his uncoupling from the team. On one level, the feud has to do with Lee's entering and exiting privileges at Madison Square Garden, which Spike Lee said he's been entering and exiting Madison Square Garden the same way for the last 28 years, which like tax fraud and being annoyed by paparazzi seems the kind of trouble that you can only get if you are with a celebrity. But dig deeper, and this becomes a story about loyalty, a story about respect, a story about the proper meaning of a handshake. So though Lee has occasionally called out Knicks management in the past over the franchise's treatment of Charles Oakley and Carmelo Anthony, which Spike Lee, some people suspect that a part of this feud with James Dolan and the Knicks comes with Spike Lee supporting Charles Oakley. Last week's dispute involves the team's treatment of the director himself. The inciting incident occurred in the run up to a Knicks home game on a Monday night, when a video emerged of Lee being refused entry to a traditional courtside seat at the Garden by arena security. In the video, Lee can be heard exclaiming, "Nobody told me," and comparing himself to Oakley, a team legend whose arrest at a 2007 Knicks game marked the previous low water mark between the club and the supporters. A Page 6 reported the altercation arose from a dispute over which entrance the Oscar-winning filmmaker was using to get into the arena. Lee was coming through the employee and media entrance on 33rd Street. The team wanted him to use the VIP entrance on 31st Street. Lee eventually got seated and was able to enjoy the game, but was later seen speaking to owner James Dolan at halftime. You might think that this was a minor issue that could easily be sorted out by responsible adults. You forgot that one side in this agreement is the New York Knicks and the other side is Spike Lee. After news of the altercation began circulating online, both parties made their case to the media on Monday night. Team sources told Page 6 that despite Lee's claim in the video, the director had previously been told to stop using the employee entrance. Spike Lee said nobody told him. This is saying that they told him. Then on Tuesday morning, Lee went on ESPN's First Take, decked out Knicks gear to give his side of the story, which he did. According to Lee, he's already scanned his ticket at the employee entrance, and when the security guard surprised him as he stepped off an elevator and ordered him to leave the arena and re-enter through the VIP entrance. Lee refused, as he explained on ESPN, "Once you leave the sporting arena, you can't come back in. I'm not falling for the okey-doke." Lee also reiterated that he had been using the employee entrance for 28 years. Like I said, including just the week before, at a performance of To Kill a Mockingbird, that he received no word from the team that he needed to stop using it. The Black Klansman director, or just say Spike Lee, also announced that his spat with the team was merely a separation, not a divorce. He says he's coming back next year, but he's done for the season, he told ESPN. Lee had stuck with the team through a 45-year championship drought and seven straight losing seasons and seemed mystified by his treatment. He intimidated that that shadowy forces were afoot and being harassed by Dolan and yada, yada, yada. So my thing with this was, you know, the New York Knicks and James Dolan and them are a mess right now. But I didn't understand when Spike Lee was on ESPN, he was – obviously he felt disrespected. He felt immensely disrespected, obviously, by what the Knicks did. And he said he wasn't going – he wasn't supporting the Knicks no more this season, but he would still go back next year. And over the years, Spike Lee has spent $10 million, $10 million in tickets for the Knicks to be treated like that. Because you saying they ain't tell you, they saying they told you, but you feel disrespected, but you still want to go back and spend your money with the Knicks next year. I don't get that. I understand you're a fan, but I don't get you. Well, I do get if you're a fan, but if you're a smart person, you're a smart thinking person, I don't get you going back and spending your money with the Knicks, especially if you feel like they've disrespected you. If you feel like everything is a wash, James Dolan messing up, the whole franchise trash, all these things here, you shouldn't be wanting to go back and spend your money next year. That's the only thing that I don't get this by Spike Lee. I don't get this. You know the Knicks, you know how the Knicks running, you know, you see how they operate, but you like, hey, I'm sitting out this year, but I'll spend my money with you next year. Nah, bro, you can't get none of my money no more. If I ain't messing with you, I ain't messing with you. And that's the thing that made me go into this rant, this about the whole thing. First of all, the Knicks disrespected Spike Lee immensely. They sure did. But Spike disrespecting himself by being willing to stay, to continue to give this team some damn money. Fuck the Knicks. Don't give them no more money. Don't give them nothing. That's what I don't understand about this. Just don't give them no, don't give them nothing else, man. Don't give the Knicks nothing else. No more money, no more publicity, none of that stuff. You going on First Take and wearing Knicks gear and complaining about the Knicks is stupid. You can, what's the point of going on TV, going on these sports shows and complaining about the Knicks if you ain't going to do nothing? You ain't going to do nothing different. So Max Kellerman, the voice of reason, the white dude on there saying, hey, Spike, maybe you shouldn't go back to any more Knicks games. And Spike, I'm not going to give him the satisfaction. I'm not going to give him the victory. You stupid if you think that if I feel a business owner has disrespected me, and I continue to give that business owner money, I'm crazy. I must enjoy the disrespect. I'm not showing – my actions are not showing the business owner that their disrespect isn't going to be tolerated. My actions are showing them that they can disrespect me and get away with it because, hell, I'm going to come back. If I'm going to come back, what's the point of crying about it? No, think about it. What's the point of crying about it if you're going to go back to it? That's stupid. You're wasting everybody's time. What you crying for? Keep your business, keep it to yourself, and keep moving and go back and spend your money. But what's the point of going, of doing the tour, going on these shows and complaining about what the Knicks did? Obviously, you felt disrespected. But obviously, you ain't disrespected enough because you still want to spend your money with them. Forget the Knicks. Forget, ain't that much fandom in the world. Forget the Knicks, man. Y'all crazy, man. Y'all are crazy. You crazy as hell, Spike. If you really, if you go back and give the Knicks any more money after you felt like the way they disrespected you, you crazy. Stop complaining about it. If they happen again, we don't want to hear it. I'm like, at first I was like, damn, man, I'm riding with Spike. That's fucked up. They did that Spike. Then after Spike, I'm going to go back and spend money. I'm like, man, you wasting our time, man. Hell on, Spike. You wasting our time. Nobody give a damn about you being disrespected by the Knicks if you're going to go back and give me your goddamn money. You like it. You enjoy the disrespect. Fuck out of here, man. Fuck out of here. So that's the first half of my rant. Like, I just had to get that in because part going at the Knicks, fuck the Knicks for that bullshit. But Spike, man, what the hell? What the hell, man? If you feel disrespected by a business owner in the business, don't support that motherfucker no more. Especially a white bitch. You don't have to have the Knicks in your life. Like somebody like Max Collins, you can go be a Nets fan. You from Brooklyn, you were at the borough, go be a Nets fan. You just have to be a fan, but don't be a fan of somebody who's gonna disrespect you. So all right, so the second half of my rant goes to this ex football player named Jack Brewer, who said that Donald Trump is the first black president. First of all you Negroes, before I get into the article, all you Negroes who still out here calling these white boys, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, and any other white boy president that whoever dick down your throat that you love, shut the fuck up and stop that dumb shit. Y'all sound stupid. Y'all sound real. That's a real boot-licking niggas out there. Trump, Donald Trump, first black president of the United States, Bill Clinton. Yeah, y'all said Bill Clinton was the first black president, was a black president because he got a blowjob, like white boys don't get blowjobs. He cheated on his wife, like white boys don't cheat on their wife. And he smoked weed, like white boys don't smoke weed. And he played the saxophone. Yeah, black people play the saxophone better, but like white boys don't play the saxophone. You all basically call Bill Clinton a black president because of his negative attributes. You all equate negative attributes to blackness, which is fucking stupid. But let's get into Jack Brewer, because I don't know too much about Jack Brewer. And so let's find out why Jack Brewer is calling Trump the first black president, because Jack Brewer sounds like a dumbass just off the top, right? So who in the hell and what in the devil, during Black History Month, during that Black History Month celebration, and during Black History Month at the time, Jack Brewer bitch ass said this. During the Black History Month celebration in the Cabinet Room at the White House on Thursday, a gang of black supporters of Donald Trump assembled to praise him and top his record, because it's a bunch of bootlicking niggas out there, right? One person of interest did the unspeakable, calling poor POTUS the first black president. Yes, you read that correctly. I've got to say this because it's Black History Month, and this is the article by The Root. You're the first black president. And this is what, what's the nigga name? Jack Brewer. So Jack Brewer said, I've got to say this because it's Black History Month, man. You're the first black president. And Jack Brewer is a former NFL player. So he said as the event was winding down. So Jack Brewer basically just said, Donald Trump, I want to suck your dick. Put your dick deep down in my throat, Donald Trump, because I'm a bitch-ass black dude who will sell out, and I want to suck dick. That's what Jack Brewer should have basically said. Donald Trump, I'm already slurping you. You might as well put your dick deep down my throat, because I'm already slurping you, and I'm already on your ass like that, because I'm a boot-licking Negro. Right? So although Barack Obama is the first, according to this article, they're saying forever president. Barack Obama ain't no fucking forever president. Black people need to get the fuck over that. But although forever president Barack Obama earned that distinction in official history in 2008 election in the highest office of the land, the former Minnesota Viking safety said otherwise, because, you know, Barack Obama's actually of black descent. And so he's an actual black person in the White House, right? I've been a Democrat all my life, but I'm not a Democrat now, the 41-year-old ordained minister told Trump during the discussion, which also included social media personalities Diamond and Silk and Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, whoever, fuck her, we don't care about her, among the others. You've changed me, you've touched me. He ain't talking about being touched emotionally, he's allegedly been talking about touch physically. Allegedly, I'm going to say that, allegedly. You've changed me, you've touched me, and you make my work go to another level. You inspire me, and every time I go into those prisons and I ask my guys how many of them had their sentences reduced and they raised their hands, I know I'm doing God's work, and thank you, and I thank you for that. Yeah, boy, shut up. The Fort Worth, Texas native played college ball at Southern Methodist University before a short 5-year pro career, so I'm zigzag on the roster of an NFL team, such as the Giants, Eagles, and St. Louis Cardinals. Jack Brewer, man, shut the fuck up, man. So Brewer is also reportedly a professor at Fordham University and has been a vocal pro-Trump supporter. So he party jumping. So he just party jumping. So now they, but I don't get black people who are party jumpers, who are jumping the Democratic Party to the Republican Party as if the Republican Party has ever done anything when the Republican Party was faking like they was helping black people, it was the Democratic Party now. So people just switch parties. So this current Republican Party after the switch ain't done shit. So first of all, if you're part of the Republican Party, stop trying to claim what the actual Democrats did when they were part of the Republican Party. Stop trying to claim that, because the people who are Republicans now didn't think like that and didn't do that. So stop trying to claim that. But you fools who jump parties looking for the Republican Party to give black people something different, the Republican Party ain't never did nothing for black people, just like the Democratic Party ain't never did nothing for black people. So stop party jumping. But then for this dude, Jack Brewer, to go out and be like, Donald Trump, the first black president, man, get that man dick out your mouth. Get that man dick out your mouth, Jack Brewer. You sound like a bitch. That's why people don't be trusting these pastors and looking at these pastors sideways, because these pastors be looking like straight bitches, man. Acting like straight bitches. You a bitch for saying this, Jack Brewer. Donald Trump, you changed my life. You touched me. You the first black president. Man, you the first black president ever, man. Because it's black history. In the middle of black history, you disrespectful son of a bitch. Jack Brewer, that's what you are. You a disrespectful, boot-licking, Donald Trump dick-sucking, allegedly son of a bitch. You soft bitch, Jack Brewer, for saying that. Get that man dick out your mouth, man. Stop that shit. You embarrassing yourself. You look like a damn fool up there, sitting up there talking about, well, you know, he the first black president. It's Black History Month. You touched me. You changed my life. Donald Trump showed up black people. Even though Donald Trump really ain't did nothing for black people, he got one black person out of jail, and he talked about doing a lot of things for black people. He did meetings, but Donald Trump really ain't did nothing for black people. But I show love me some Donald Trump like I love some sweet potato pie. Donald Trump this and Donald Trump that. So wish I had some Donald Trump. Jack Brewer, you was a bitch. You might as well put on the white gloves and go out there singing and dancing. You a boot-licking nigga, Jack Brewer. That's what you are. When white people created niggas, they was thinking about people like you. And remember, like, a nigga ain't just somebody who got gold teeth or got locks in the hair, running around and all that stuff there. Those black people. Black people can have many looks, just like niggas can have many looks. And niggas do wear suits. And Jack Brewer, you's a nigga. Don't let these white people get you pumped up. White people don't like you. Beautiful to tell you all the time. We don't like your kind, Negro. I don't understand why all you niggas come in and try to act like it's because you do all the little trickety trick stuff that we don't like. If you sell out your own people, we know you sell us out too. You think we're stupid? You niggas think we real stupid? You think we will really like you, especially you sell out niggas? If you sell out your people, you sell us out too. Fuck out of here, nigga. We don't like your kind. That's what, how many times Buford got to tell y'all that, man? Jack Brewer, do the world a favor. Pull your bottom lip over your head and swallow. Your family should be ashamed of you. Your father should have nutted on the floor. Straight up, Jack Brewer, your father should have nutted on the floor and would have saved the world from seeing your bitch ass. Because Jack Brewer, you an embarrassment and a total bitch. Get Donald Trump dick out your mouth, you fuck boy. Hey, man. It's the Fix Sports Podcast, episode, five or six? I can't remember. God damn it, you know. It's going to be up in the posting. Thank y'all for rolling with me, rocking with me. Remember, you can support your homeboy on Patreon at www.patreon.com/thefix for as little as a dollar. And for those who are my patrons, you get to see the video of me moving and shaking, dancing, and all that other crazy stuff that I be doing. You probably hear me doing in the background. You're like, what the fuck is he doing? You get to see it if you become a patron. So www.patreon.com/thefix. Remember, y'all visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That we can learn more about myself, Patrick Irvin, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma September. And it's really going down. And remember, stay tuned, because we're going to have audio and pictures and video from our live podcast coming soon. Once again, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can catch this podcast on all major podcast outlets. This is the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest, funniest, and the blackest sports podcast that you have ever heard in your entire life. Tell about it. I'm going straight from the side. I'm coming straight from the side. Going down. Audio Shop Talk right in your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward. Amen. Two fingers in the air like a player, man. I'm up out of here, man. Peace.
I am the greatest.
I called the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm Snarecloth. There's no one that can.